The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of the management and staff of Guardian Radio.
With early detection comes early prevention.
Put lead in your pencil, make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again, let nothing keep you down. To live your best,
hear the urologist speak.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
Think you're losing grip of your mind, then don't give up on hope.
Don't be ashamed, it's time to take control. Get some help from the urologist.
Good evening, Bahamas. This is The Urologist Speaks with Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. My co-host this evening is Mr. Calvin Green. Thank you very much for giving us your time, Mr. Calvin Green. He's a veteran of the tourism industry, a hotelier. He's the vice chairman of the Junkanoo Parade Committee. He's a instrumental leader, youth leader, and male group leader at St. Francis Catholic Church. Welcome and Happy New Year to you, Mr. Calvin Green.
Well, Doc, it's always a pleasure to be here. Thank you very much. And I wish the best for our country as we travel into 2026, that we become a much nicer and better country in 2026. Yeah.
Let's pray on that. We have what was supposed to be our part two with Dr. Ian Fernando, who's running a little bit late. He'll be here in a couple minutes, but we'll start the interesting talk right now. So we want to talk about the health of the nation is obviously the wealth of the nation. Let me start with some inspiring quotes. Playing it safe is the most dangerous thing you can do in life. You always want to shoot for the stars. Even if you fall short, you're still amongst the clouds. So never give up, and there's no reason to not try. Some of the greatest failures you can have in your life will have some of the most positive impacts in your life, even more than the success that you can have along the way. So the journey may be difficult, but always keep your eye on the prize. A second quote, what comes easy won't last. What lasts won't come easy. Nothing in life comes easy. And unfortunately, with our culture here, we want everything quick. We don't want to sacrifice for the betterment of our life down the road. We want everything right here, right now. So we're going to talk about the crisis that men, teenagers, and boys are facing in this country. There's not enough said about half of our nation in turmoil and crisis. And we see the repercussions of that all of the time. We see young boys, teenagers, young men failing in school, failing to achieve academically on par with their female counterparts. We see it in the form of crime, that 95% of crime is committed by men. Why is that? We can't blame the fatherless homes where the same young girls are able to succeed. So we need to look into that. We also want to talk about a controversial topic, and that's corporal physical punishment in the schools and in the home and throughout the Bahama lands. And then we want to lastly talk about a topic near and dear to your heart, Mr. Calvin Green, and that's the cleanliness of our nation. The cleanliness of our nation.
Yes, yes.
That is a major issue that unfortunately is also reaching crisis potential. So let's start with the big talk, and we don't want to have a didactic lecture just between the two of us. Please feel free to chime in and call in. The call-in numbers are 323-6232, 325-4316, and 325-4259. Mr. Calvin Green, what is your opinion on corporal punishment in terms of physical? We're not talking about emotional. We're not talking about words berating a young man for doing wrong. We're talking about literal physical, and we have to tiptoe along the line with corporal punishment and actual physical abuse. What is your standpoint in regards to that?
In terms of on this You mean it in terms of your, the way your parents dealt with you?
Your parents, teachers, your guidance counselors, your principals.
Yeah. Well, but listen, I grew up in an era where discipline was the order of the day. And it began with your mom, my mother disciplined us. She was a school teacher. And being a school teacher, there was a certain standard that she expected from us. And beating us to help us to understand that was not a problem. And I always tell people, you know, listen, I got plenty of beating from my mom. And I'm not crazy. I love her to death. Nothing happened to me. And I believe if it wasn't for her guidance and the way she directed me, I don't know where I would be today. And I give her credit for that every day. School, the same way. I went to St. Francis School with the nuns and also the lay teachers. And there were many beating in there also. You know, I'm with the cane and so forth. And, you know, nothing happened to me again. And there were a lot of us who went through that era where nothing happened. And then this guy comes out, I forgot, and they say, if you beat the child, he is going to go into a shell, and this is going to happen and that. And I think as a result of that, today we see children going wild and nobody to say to them, you're doing something wrong, to guide them.
Yeah, so when we talk about the debate, obviously, there's going to be 50-50 across the board in our public in regards to support versus opposition. It centers on the effectiveness of corporal punishment versus harm it may do. So opponents often will talk about when they're speaking against corporal punishment, they cite links to young boys, teenagers, even young men developing aggression, developing mental health issues, promoting violence and antisocial behavior at that moment in time and even later in life. Proponents will then counter and argue that corporal punishment is a necessary, non-abusive discipline for teaching respect and compliance. I look at the AAP, which is the American Academy of Pediatrics. It does not support corporal punishment due to its negative impacts and effects such as increased anxiety and aggression in children. Looking at the WHO, the World Health Organization, it estimates as many as 1.2 billion children worldwide are subjected to corporal punishment. What would you think of me making the statement, Mr. Calvin Green, that far too many boys and male teenagers in the Bahamas lack direction and discipline?
No, you would be absolutely right. But I just want to sort of bring this into perspective. When you talk about corporal punishment in a sense, you're not talking about a punishment where you beat the child and the black and blue or they have to go to the hospital. You're talking about a form of correction that need to set you in the direction so you understand that this is what is expected of you.
That's what we would like.
Yeah.
If you are a supporter of corporal punishment. Nobody obviously wants to see somebody physically abused and scarred emotionally or even physically. But unfortunately, if you give somebody free rein,
absolutely,
they'll take it to the extreme. There's some people who don't have the discipline within themselves to pull back. They may have anger issues in themselves that, you know what, if they can beat a child, maybe they're having a horrible day. Maybe their wife just left them. Maybe they found out the girlfriend is cheating on them. They're going to beat that child black and blue, and they're going to use it under the cloud of saying, you know what, I'm trying to teach this child to go on the straight and narrow.
Yeah.
And it's a dangerous road to go down. And who's going to police it? Is it actually going to be the police? Is it going to be the Ministry of Education? We'd like to welcome Dr. Ian Fernander, who is a little bit late, as I mentioned. Thank you for being here, Dr. Ian Fernander. Just a little background. He's a lifestyle coach. He's the longest serving employee of the Central Bank of the Bahamas. He's now retired. He's a successful businessman. He's a great mentor to young men in particular. He's also a publisher. So you are a Bahamian icon on many levels, even in the financial services. I understand that you are in charge of education. Welcome, Mr. Ian Fernander.
Good day. Welcome.
So we were talking about young men. We're talking about young men in crisis. We're talking about the lack of discipline, the lack of direction. So obviously this is a health show, and we are catering to the Bahamian public. That includes men, women, and children. But unfortunately, far too many men are in crisis, and when half our nation's in crisis, I'm going to use this opportunity to reach out to persons who are or are forgotten in our society.
But Doc, I want to finish just my thought process on that and say to you that even the Bible say if you spare the child, if I remember how to
quote, spare the rod.
Yeah,
spoil the child.
All right. I mean, so my point is there has to be some form of direction. There has to be some form of punishment for when you don't do what you're supposed to do or you don't carry out the rules as expected. Nobody, even in your own house, you can't just let things run wild.
Correct, but go ahead.
How you apply that punishment may be up to you. But I, like I say, I grew up in an era and I have no shame. My mom, if I did something wrong and she felt that I needed to be switched, I got that. That's an era I grew up in. And like I say, I'm not crazy. I don't abuse anybody. But she knew the right level of punishment to give me so that I understand what she was talking about.
I totally agree with you. That level of discipline, though, I think one of the slips we've made today is that discipline does not seem to come along with love. Today, discipline is simply about hurting the person who did something wrong. In our day, we were being disciplined within the context of love and expectation and ambition. And hey, I want you to be better.
Yes, I want you to succeed.
I think today some of that is being stripped down to the bare bones. Look, you did something wrong, you're going to get hurt.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is not there.
Yeah.
I give you an example from my own life. I have four boys, and they went to Christian schools. In primary school, one of them got in trouble, and he was whipped, suspended, told that he will never go on another field trip. And he was, 7 years old? He and a group of other boys, whipped in front of everybody, black and blue, suspended, and also suspended from any other further activity in the school as long as he was there. So I went to a meeting with the leadership of the school. I says, tell me something, this is Christian school. These boys that did this thing wrong, has anybody sat and had a conversation about what was wrong? Has anybody sat and prayed with these boys? Has anybody sat and made them understand that you wanted them to be good people?
Yes.
And that you were going to support their redemption. And they were dumbfounded because none of that had happened. The only thing that had happened was punishment.
Yeah. But Doc, you said something very, very, very critical. And you're right. It was done with love. That was the key word. The punishment was not just meted out to you to hurt you. It was meted out to you so that you understand there's a level that I expect from you and the direction I want from you, and it has to do with you being a good human being, making a contribution to your country and any place else that you go in this world. It was done with love. And that's a very, very key point that is missing or component. Yeah.
Well, I have a question for you, Dr. Ian Fernanda.
Yeah.
And you have vast experience raising four boys, and that's a huge task in itself. There's a cultural propensity to dish out the harshest possible punishment when we feel males in our society go awry, while leaning towards concern and comforting and caring and counseling when females go awry and do wrong. How can we justify the inequality in the way that we mete out justice for males and females? And what are the consequences of doing such?
I don't know that we can justify it. But I can tell you one of the consequences that I see, especially with young men that I work with, is that with this history of understanding as a young man that when a man does something wrong, he deserves the harshest reaction. And by the time they get a certain age, they expect to get the harshest reaction, and it doesn't matter because that's what happens. So it's self-defeating, this harshest reaction. But they also get in their mind that when a man does something to offend them, he deserves the harshest response. There's no room for conversation. There's no room for redemption. There's no room for anything but to give him the greatest pain you can find, because that's what's been happening with me all my life.
Yeah. I want to add to what Doc was, you know, and during that era, as men, we were taught that we were the breadwinners. We were the people who were supposed to guide the family. And so society expected much more from us than they did from the females.
Definitely.
They'd always thought that the females will survive somehow, but for the male, we have to set him in a direction that he has to understand he's in charge, he's the father, and that everything comes from him. And so that's why we were looked at in such a way, because we were the guiding post of the family. The family goes to church. Whatever happens, happens from the daddy.
But let me just make this point.
Yeah.
As men in this country, and this is generation after generation, we cannot continue to ignore what is not seen. The interior world of boys, of bohemian male teenagers and men in our country is made up of our thoughts, or our emotions, our feelings, but what is unseen in the males in this country is often more important than is what is seen. So our society has trained boys from the age of 4 years old and teenagers, young men, not to cry, not to call out for help, not to look for counseling, not to tell anyone that they're in pain. They internalize that trauma, and sometimes it just erupts, and that may erupt with bad behavior. So when these young men are challenged, they're taught to just soldier through in life, avoid the concern for their inner well-being. But let me give you another scenario. Let's say somebody is a 14-year-old boy. All of a sudden, he's not turning in his homework. He's late for school. He's being aggressive towards his teachers, and he's back-talking and everything else. But let's look at the root of the matter. What's going on? Let's give a scenario. Possibly, his mother was diagnosed with breast cancer. His father couldn't take the stress of seeing his wife going through breast cancer and left the house. They went into financial ruin and had to go and move into their grandmother's two-room house with no running water, and he has to sleep on the couch with no electricity, not knowing where his next meal is coming from, hearing his mother cry herself to sleep every night. We're not looking at why is he acting out. Why is he, what are the stressors? What initiated him acting that way? Beating him is not making any better. It's just going to further scar him. And that's what happens all the time. We don't look for what is troubling these men. And it might take a long time for them to open up and seek help, because they're taught never to show any weakness. But beating that young man in any form is not going to help him.
But see, Doc, this is a different era. When I spoke and Dr. Fernando, we talked about it, that was a different era. This is a whole new situation. Whatever we're into now, and the level of what we're talking about now, the dichotomy of that is very, very different. We're talking about families from a lot of single mother home, with no daddy, no direction, no nothing. And as I said to you many times, not many times, but the few times, I mean, I happen to go to schools where a young boy comes from a home, he hasn't slept all night because his mother is with some fella who doing whatever they're doing and he hasn't had a chance to sleep. Or he isn't properly attired. His teeth isn't brushed or hair comb. Those kinds of situations. So these are very, very different dynamics we're talking about now when you're talking about when we were and when what we're dealing with now. This is a whole different situation.
Yeah, and we still have to go back to what I'm going to call the sort of lack of love in today's society. Because even back then, 20, 30, 40 or more years ago, a young man caught in a situation like that, and people were in situations that were dire, would still be caught by other men in society, men in the church, men in the neighborhood, women in the neighborhood, women in the church and in the school. Teachers were not just teachers, but they were concerned about your well-being as a person. So some of that has also evaporated from us. This thing where I know when I was a boy and selling papers on the street, I would be 5 miles from home and people would know whose son I was.
Absolutely. In fact, if you did something wrong, by the time you reach home, your mom knew you did something wrong.
That doesn't happen today.
Yeah.
And that was without cell phones.
And that was without cell phones.
Without cell phones. So it's not just not happening today because people don't know other people's children. There is a lack of concern among us today for anything outside of ourselves. So men see young men doing something that needs to be corrected. In my day, you were not going to get away without being corrected by that other man, yes, even if he was a total stranger.
Absolutely.
Today, we don't even want to say something to our friends' kids, much less some strange kid. We have to make the adjustments back to loving our neighbors.
We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Good evening. Good evening, sir. You gentlemen, listening to the show, and I agree a lot with a lot that you're saying. And you know, back in the day, my dad, he said, back in the day, the men were teachers in the schools, and the men were smarter than the women. And so I wonder where all the changes came about in such a short space of time, because the teachers were men back in the day, right?
Yes.
And we have a lot of problems. You know, we complain about the men of this and the men of that. But I believe the most violent people in the world today are women. They are violent people. You understand? And they are mistreating these children. When you have a mother is going to slap a boy in his mouth, what they do is they try to silence these children from talking. You understand?
I understand your point. Yes.
And a lot of this abuse and thing is being perpetrated by the women. Women are violent, very violent people, man. They commit abortion. They create all. They have strangers coming inside the house. This is making these young children very, very angry. The boys have to watch the mummy and thing with other men and all that. Men don't do that to their children. Not men. Okay, I just called to support these men because we look like we ain't talking out.
Well, we're here to try to support our nation and men and women, and let's see a brighter tomorrow. We did make some controversial but interesting points. I'm not going to agree with all of them, but I understand where you're coming from. But thank you for your call. But let's look at a typical 5-year-old who is asked to sit still in school. and he fails to sit or fails to pay attention and stay engaged in classes are often diagnosed with some form of disability. They're labeled. And imagine feeling as if you are disabled in some way from the age of 5 years old. The other kids are ridiculing you. They look down on you. They see you as inferior. You internalize that you are somehow inferior. Then it gets to the point where in the last 20 years, everyone is being diagnosed with ADHD, attention deficit disorder. Everyone is getting medication. It's a huge issue, not just in this country. In fact, more so in developed countries like United States, United Kingdom, Canada, and Europe. But we have to look at why are we medicating? Why are we having these men who are having these deficit disorders, or why are they acting out in class? So in my reading on this subject, in the United States, 23% of school-aged boys have been diagnosed with some form of developmental disability, which is double the rate for girls. If one in four boys has a developmental disability, then it is not the school educational system which is disabling, rather than the boys themselves who are disabled. So is it a failure of the actual system? Or they are disabling our young men and labeling them at a young age? In 2020, looking at the United Kingdom for attention deficit disorder diagnosis, the rate of diagnosis rose by approximately 20-fold. Among boys aged 10 to 16 years old, the diagnosis of ADHD increased from 1% to approximately 3.5% in 2018. In men aged 18 to 29 years old, it showed an uptake of nearly 50-fold in the last decade for ADHD prescriptions.
Well, you know, Doc, but you reading those statistics, I got to say we have a very sick nation. And the reason why I said it, because if you think about all the fights that we've had after school from most schools in this country that I've seen video going around in 2025, where we have a lot of students with ADS or
ADHD.
We are a truly sick nation when it comes to students being in school with all the fights and not only boys, females too. Females, I mean, I've seen some of the most violent and terrible fights after school are going around on social media. So we really got a real problem.
Yeah, I don't know that I subscribe to these labels. Yeah. I don't know that boys are any different from boys in the past. But one of the things that I notice might be different is that we don't have the level of engagement for not just boys, even men. By engagement, I mean the physical activity, going outside and playing with friends for hours, being able to wander about freely as a five-year-old and do stuff with other people, building things, playing games, being competitive, releasing your testosterone as a male, not just as a male boy, but men, even grown men, have been sort of disrobed of this ability to sort of like engage themselves physically as opposed to just mentally.
And Doc is absolutely right again. We have become less social because we used to spin top. We fly kite, shoot marble. And so there were many ways that we socialize with other guys from around another corner or another area. We were on roller skates. And all of these things brought us together as community. Now we have men who don't even smile. You could go and fellas them look as if they won't fight you, because they don't know what it is to be social, to smile, to have that goodwill about you, so that when you meet somebody, you meet them with dignity and respect. And so, Doc, we've lost that.
And there's too much of screen time. We lose that personal touch, those personal interactions, those friendships that shape you as a individual. Going out with your friends and playing basketball or playing dominoes, whatever. Now they're glued to their iPad. They're glued to their Xbox or their PlayStation. And that's their social interaction. You're communicating, and your best friends are somebody you've never met and will never meet, maybe in Norway or in Germany or somewhere in Africa that you're playing games online with. And usually these games are violent in nature. Some experts are looking at ADHD, and it's a major issue in every school and for young persons throughout the world. They look at it from a different perspective. So when they say when children are under stress, they'll automatically have engagement of their sympathetic nervous system, and they'll either exhibit a flight or fight response. So just looking at it layman's terms, if a pit bull is going to run after a 10-year-old, either that 10-year-old is going to run for his life or is going to fight to survive. So one of the first signs that the child is under stress is that they cannot manage to sit still, that they're going to become possibly aggressive in school or in the home. They may hit, they may lash out, they may bite if they're 3 years old. They may throw chairs, they may disrupt the class. Or a child may cope with stress in another way. They may be distracted and withdrawn. That's the flight response. So stressors may be divorce of a parent. It may be abuse in the home. It may be neglect. It may be the death of a grandmother. It may be bullying at school itself. So labeling every child as having ADHD when they're easily distracted or because they are disruptive or aggressive in school is not managing the stressor. And I always try to, as a cornerstone of this show, in medicine, you always treat the root cause. You don't treat just the symptom. Obviously, you want to treat the symptom to feel better immediately, but you must treat the root cause, whether that's hypertension or diabetes causing erectile dysfunction. If that's what you want to do is treat erectile dysfunction, let's treat the root cause. If you want to treat the cause of disruption in the school or aggression in the school or bad behavior in the school, let's look at the stressors of this child. Let's interview the primary caregivers. Let's look at interview the friends. What has gone wrong lately? Why is this boy going through the stress to cause him to act up? We'll talk more about this interesting talk on the other end of the break. This is Urologist Speaks.
Gal, can you believe this? We are now the patrol queens of the neighborhood.
We now large and in charge. So we need to check out what's going on in everybody's yard. What about that gun that we know that Junior and his homeboys just ran out? Can we report that too?
Of course we can.
But we could be in deep trouble if they find out.
We need to report what we see, Beulah. When you call Crime Stoppers, they just answer your call in Miami.
So then we can report everything? Guns, where they hiding the drugs, who shoot who part of which gang, or who disturbing the peace with the loud music and the motorcycles.
Then our neighborhood will be the best in the Bahamas, and everybody gonna want to come live here. And then our house price will go up, gal.
So what we waiting on? What's the number?
If you see something, say something. Let us all pitch in and stop the crime before it's your time. Call 328-8477 from Nassau, or 242-300-8477 from the Family Islands, or text us through the Crack Crime Bahamas app. Stop the crime before it's your time.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
For fast, reliable, and impactful printing services, look no further. Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life. We stand by our quality products that is second to none. Our affordable pricing and friendly, efficient staff makes Printmasters the ultimate choice for all your printing needs. We can deliver any type of printing services, from banners to booklets to business cards. You name it, we can print it.
Let Printmasters bring your masterpiece to life.
Located in the Nassau Guardian Building, telephone 302-2361.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Early bird sound, feel like a champion.
Welcome back. This is Urologist Speaks. This is Bahamian urologist Dr. Gregory Pinto. I'm joined by my co-host, Mr. Calvin Green. And our guest of honor is, again, Dr. Ian Fernander. We were talking about young men, trying to save young men. There's no doubt that there's a quiet crisis unfolding in our classrooms and playgrounds and homes across the Bahamas. Bahamian boys and teenagers are struggling in school. Boys simply in this country are in crisis. And it's not just limited to the Bahamas. Globally, boys are falling behind girls academically. So it's not a disparity only seen in the Bahamas. What are your opinions on that, Dr. Ian Fernando? Why are men, young boys, and it usually, there's pretty much parity until grade five, grade six. It's moving up into junior high school where there's a transition and girls flourish and boys fall way behind.
I think there's a compendium of reasons. I'm just going to stick with one of them that I think is relevant, and it's the whole matter of us not as men and boys not being acquainted with how to deal with failure and the prospect of failure. So we get to this competitive thing in grade seven, grade eight, or whatever, where suddenly we're like, boy. It's possible that I can fail. It's possible that I can, I know I'm smart, but these girls are really smart. Now, the science says that when you get to that age, the girls develop faster than the boys mentally. That's not because of anything other than that's just how human beings are. The girls develop physically at that age when you get in grade six, grade seven, grade eight, they develop faster. The boys develop mentally and physically later on. All of a sudden in grade 10, 11, 12, the boys get tall and they start to get smart. But in that space where they're not developed so much, they get put into this place where they have to reckon with failure. Nobody teaches them that failure is okay, that it's temporary, that it's a march towards success. And they like throw up their hands. It's like, I don't know how to deal with failure. So I'm not going to deal with it. If I don't play the game, then no one can say that I lost. So some boys just retreat.
I see that boys face two big structural disadvantages in education. Firstly, as you mentioned, their brains simply develop later. And anatomically, their prefrontal cortex of the brain, which controls the skills of organization, of planning, and impulse control, which develops in adolescence a year later on average for boys than for girls. So there's always going to be a significant difference, maybe when it's grade seven, grade eight, in the timing of the brain development for these preteens and teens for boys and girls. So social scientists refer to this just mentioned skills of organization, planning, and impulse control as non-cognitive skills. So, for example, doing your homework requires impulse control to counter the sensation-seeking behavior where you have that urge to go out and do something more fun and more exciting. During adolescence, girls have a reasonable balance between impulse control and sensation-seeking behavior that a lot of preteens and teenage boys do not have. So right there, there's a stark difference just in terms of the development of the brain, in terms of how they fall behind, usually in grade seven and grade eight.
Well, maybe you need to come from, and I go back to, I'll use me as an example. I go back to my mom, who was a teacher. And being a teacher, being the son of a teacher, she was always on our case to be the best and to do your homework. And so when school closed for the summer, we had no summer to run and play ball. And she would tell you, do your homework first, get all out of the way, and then you can go and play. When we came home from school, we went straight to the table to do your homework. So maybe my brain got developed a little bit quicker
Well, no. You had the advantage of having discipline around.
Yes.
And this is not discipline in terms of punishment. This is discipline in terms of structure and somebody understanding that they had to keep you level.
Yes.
And they did that. That too is lacking. So we have this dispensation where people are prone to punish a lot, but not as prone to keep someone in the straight and narrow through discipline.
Yeah.
And that's what you had. You had a lot of discipline.
A lot of discipline, yeah.
But gentlemen, do you think the typical young male in this country, whether it's boy, preteen, teenager, young man, believes that education is a key to a better life? Do you think that if they were born into poverty, I always say poverty does not define you, and you always need to let hardship build character, self-determination, and impeccable worth ethic to rise above your difficult circumstances. But if you see your mother struggling, you see your grandmother struggling, do you think that they have that self-belief and knowledge that education, and because of this wonderful society that we have, you can get a free education, whether it's at maintaining a decent GPA at the University of the Bahamas and then innumerable scholarships that are possible to go on to get postgraduate studies throughout the world. You can see the world. I'm an example of that. I've seen the world because of studies, because of academic pursuits. But there's so many boys and teenagers who are actually terrified, as you said, to apply themselves to higher academic pursuits for fear of, I don't think you mentioned this, peer ridicule. And it's abundant. It's ingrained in our society that young men are looked down upon for doing well academically. It's almost as if they're seen to be emasculating themselves by getting all A's, by going on the honor roll, by getting the top mark in a chemistry exam. So a typical 12-year-old, 13-year-old, 14-year-old in school is desperately attempting to fit in, to be accepted, to be respected by their peers. They start to have interest in young women. And unfortunately, another glaring problem in our society, from young teenage girls to young women to older women in their 20s and 30s, Bahamian women across the board love bad men. They love men who go against the grain, who are always butting heads in the schools and getting detention. They'd rather be with a man who's perpetually in detention than someone who's perpetually on the honor roll. And there's something wrong with our society because of that.
That's the problem. That is the problem that you mentioned right there. And as I think about it, men, young Bahamian men, and while I don't have any statistics to support this, but based on me being what I call on the ground and what I see in society, you know, young Bahamian men prefer to send their female to a better education. They send them to school, get educated, while they sit on the block, go to Araki, hang out with the boys, do everything that is counteractive to education and being productive. And then the women get smarter than them and they become, again, they use this word, unequally yoked. And she says, now, you know, I mean, boy, we can't be together anymore. I smarted at you. So this is what I see in society where the men go off and do, all they want to do is have a good time. And look here, if we didn't have the women in our society, I don't think we would have the society that we have today because the women seem to get things done much more than the men.
I mean, the women are the foundation of our society. They run the homes. They are our future. If we didn't have them, I don't know where our society would be.
We'd be in trouble.
And it's even a deeper issue. I think that even good fathers, I think it's been ingrained in them that they believe that they worry. Obviously, most fathers are going to worry more about their daughter than their son. But they're going to be worried because they believe in this society, and even it's going to be worse off in the future, that their 15-year-old daughter, their 12-year-old daughter, their 10-year-old daughter is going to have a very difficult time finding a man who's going to be good to them, a man is going to be faithful to them. One, a man is going to support them, and they're going to have the typical nuclear family of love and support. It's us against the world. Yeah. It's so much negativity out there that they think that, you know what, I need to make sure that my daughter has the skills to survive on her own, that she has the academics to succeed professionally, that she can support herself, that she's not going to have to struggle, because these fathers believe there aren't any good men.
And unfortunately, one problem is feeding another, because you need good men and you need good women. So we have spent a lot of currency making sure that women are fine and ignoring where the men are still fine. And we're losing a lot of our fine men. We still have a lot of them. Let's not play games here. A lot of our we say that women are core to society today, but I kind of disagree, because I think that a lot of good things that are happening in this country are being done by men. However, the longer we proceed with this system where it's okay for a man not to be supported in his success, it's okay for a man to be quickly cut into pieces whenever he makes a mistake, when all these things become part and parcel and okay for us to do it, our men, then we end up having to over-support the women, and that ends up causing less. It's just not a good equation. We got to fix that equation.
And I think the typical young man, 17, 18 years old, coming out of high school, for far too many years of the last decade in particular, they don't have the skills, the bare minimum skills to even function in any job. And we talk about job because they don't even talk about career. You mentioned it previously when you were on the radio, Calvin. If you own a business and you want to hire somebody, you may see 30 people and you may find one suitable candidate.
Absolutely, absolutely, absolutely.
And that's a damning indictment in our society on so many levels that we are, it's wonderful to say, all right, you got to go to school. We could have truancy officers, but what are they doing in school? What is their mentality? Are they actually achieving anything in school? Is there anything positive coming from, or are they just aging out? Are they just aging up?
I want to butt in here with something. From my life, I was not taught how to survive by school. I wasn't. I was taught how to survive, how to exist, by my parents, by my community, by my church, by everything else around me. School taught me how to think and to grasp knowledge and the stuff, but most of my survival skills and the very idea that I had a responsibility to survive came from those sources. The question is that working properly today? Are the homes and the churches and the communities actually forcefully or deliberately finding a way to ensure that a young man knows how to survive and what that actually means, knows that he has to become responsible and what that actually means? I don't know if we're doing a good job of that, and we can't blame that on the young men.
Well, let me say something about that, Doc. You know, and on getting back to what Dr. Pinto was saying, the human resources in our country, as I see it, and I know I'm not far off, is very challenging, because I talk to business owners every day, and I just finished talking to one today. It's probably the most challenging part of doing business in our country, finding good human resources. And not only that, are they dependable? Do they come to work?
They spend 30% of their day at work on their phone.
Yeah.
Are they disciplined?
Well, I'll tell you, let me give you an example. They're supposed to be to work at 8, or let's say 9. They come late. They spend about an hour having coffee. Then they do a little bit of work. Then they got to go pick up the children. That takes another hour or two. Then they come back and they do a little bit more work, and then it's time to go home. So you maybe get about 3 hours of work out of our human. And the fellas, they ain't too much better, because they playing domino and doing all the other stuff that they do. So we have a very challenging human resources problem with businesses in our country and finding people who really, and we get mad, and I have to say this, when we hire people who are not behemoths to work, but they're the people who come to work. They're the people who perform when you need them, and they are there. I don't know what we do.
And we have an excellent educational system. We have some of the best teachers in the world. And in fact, you can even argue that some of the best teachers are actually in the public school, not in the private school.
Definitely.
Because of all the challenges that they have to overcome, they are probably the best teachers and the most dedicated, because it's easier to go into the cushy, quote-unquote, private school system than to labor through and try to change the nation through the difficulties of the public system. And there are so many wonderful success stories where persons have gotten that fundamental education here and they've gone off and they've flourished around the world. They have been the top persons and this and that and everything. I'll even mention my sister. I'm sure she wouldn't mind me saying. She, although was younger than me, I looked up to her because she always got A's and A's pluses. She actually thought that she went to a private school, and she thought that when she went to grade 7, she thought there was too much in terms of elitism and everything else. She didn't like the persons that she was going to school. And she opted against everybody in the family, didn't want it. She wanted to go to a government high school for her high school. And she went off and got double degrees, summa cum laude from Harvard. She went off, and which at that time, and I probably still is, the most difficult university with the lowest acceptance rate in the world. She went on to go to Yale Law School, which to this day is the number one law school and the most difficult law school in the world to get. And she topped that law school in terms of being the top student. And I remember with such pride, and I think I mentioned this before, she had the flag for her class on the procession because she was the top student. And at that time, before all the scandal, Bill Cosby was getting a PhD from Yale Law School, and they walked hand in hand. And so she had some of her fundamental years in a government school, and she went on to be the best of the best. Yeah. I know so many persons like that. We have female Bahamian neurosurgeons in our and we talk again about brain drain. They don't come back. My own sister's husband, Bahamian through and through, went through the system here. He went on to go to the top dental school in the United States, Tufts Dental School. He went on to do a subspecialty in orthodontist. So, and neither of them came back home, but they're glaring examples of the success of the Bahamian primary and high schools.
Yeah.
And there's so many stories like that. Unfortunately, when I think about it, even from my own personal view, 80% of these success stories are still abroad and they'll never come home.
Yeah, it is certainly a myth, in my view, that there's something substandard about the government schools. They are incredible in terms of the resources. Many of them are much better resourced than private schools. In terms of, it's the same teachers, the same trained teachers, and better resources, the same system. So when we start to talk about failure, I think it's unfortunate that a lot of times we're blaming the school system, and some people are saying, oh, something's wrong with the government schools. We now need to go back and say, what's wrong with us? What's wrong with the homes and with the communities and with the churches and with the organizations that are around these young people? What do they need to do better?
Well, I must say, I just want to put in a plug. I'm a product of a Catholic school system. I went through all Catholic schools, and so I'm a product of that, and I'm very proud to be a product of that system.
And Dr. Fernando, Anglican school, correct?
Anglican. But I'm
a product of Methodist school. Methodist church school.
I did go to primary school, all government schools.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we need to look at more than just what's happening. We have to look at the culture and what happens at home. Even fathers, uncles, grandfathers, they're not encouraging their sons, their nephews, their grandsons to excel academically. That is a problem. In fact, it's frowned upon. They'll more support their 18-year-old having 5 girlfriends than them getting 10 A's in exams.
And I don't even know if we should even focus so much on the academic success. I think we're also missing that if you teach someone that they have a responsibility to succeed as a human being, it doesn't matter if it's academic. It doesn't matter if they are the best carpenter in the country. It doesn't matter if they are the best nurse or the best whatever. The understanding that they need to do that is that, hey, you can be really good at anything. And that is what we're not teaching. And I think, too, sometimes the overemphasis on academics is that it's the only thing that you can possibly be good at. And if you're not good at that, there's nothing else to be good at. And I don't like that message.
Well, I think it's fundamentally important that you need to be a good person. You need to be a good citizen. You need to be a good son. You need to be a good father. You need to be a good provider, et cetera, et cetera. You need to improve your society. You need to improve the future of the Bahamas. That's fundamentally important. Academic success is meaningless if you're beating your wife when you come home from your law firm, or you're exposing your wife to innumerable sexually transmitted diseases because you're going up and down without a condom. And there's so many persons who are academically brilliant, millionaires, who do that because they think they're Teflon, they're untouchable. We have to look at solutions, though, to male crisis in schools. I believe we need to hire more male school staff. That means male guidance counselors, more male teachers, more principals. So an increase in the number of male teachers may challenge that gender stereotype that may promote positive relationships between men and children, and champion the gender equitable versions of masculinity. So if you can see that your male teacher is stressing the importance of academics, maybe you can emulate them. Maybe that can be your direct role model. And more than just role models, male teachers can drive male engagement, a sense of belonging in schools for males. Having a male teacher may dispel the idea that reading and writing just aren't for them. There's some men, young men, who just believe, you know what, I'll never be good in math. So they never believe in themselves. They've never read a novel in their life, and they never will, even going into adulthood. But we also have to look at varied teaching methods and maybe changing the subject matter that engages boys. We might want to address directly why Bahamian boys are being disengaged from education. You need to look at male status anxiety. There's too much. They're too worried. The typical 14-year-old, the biggest nightmare that they want to avoid is being called soft or sissy. Mm-hmm. And how do you do that? You don't study. You don't apply yourself. You don't show respect to your elders in school. So a bad boy is what they try to be. Well, and where does that get you in life? Nowhere.
Well, what I want to say, Doc, outside the space of school, we need to, what I call, bring together more mentorship programs. For example, Scouts. I want to put in a plug for Scouts. Young boys start Scouts is a great grooming space for young boys to become young men.
And Key Club as well.
Key Club. We need more mentorship, more men to be involved with the lives of young boys. Until we do that, outside or what I call the space of school, and they come home to a space where there is no direction, there's no place they can go. We are going to continue, in my mind, have these antisocial behavior and areas where there's no direction. Yeah. So we need a good mentorship program.
Definitely. Yeah. But we have really great mentorship programs. Let's start with what I think is one of the wonderful ones we have in this country that many countries don't have. We've got John Canoe. That is a mentorship program. As you mentioned, we've got Scouts and other churches and other organizations have different things.
And I don't know if you know this, Dr. Fernando. This is the vice chairman of the Parade John Canoe Committee. Mr. Calvin Green. So he knows John Canoe inside out.
So he knows. He knows the relevance of how that pulls young men along. However, it's not just one thing, because if you have Scouts or if you have John Canoe, if you have anything else, and you don't have a home that tells the young man, I will support you. I need you to go to Scouts. I need you to go to Key Club. I need you to be a part of this group. And I will support you. Why didn't you go to John Canoe practice tonight? that stuff is also as relevant as having these organizations, having somebody support you and say, hey, it's okay for you to be a part of that.
Yes, yes.
Very well said. We have a call coming in. Good evening. This is Urologist Speaks.
Happy New Year to you, Doc, and your guests.
Thank you very much.
And it is always a pleasure to listen to your show. I try not to call the show, but I mean, the bait is so good.
Thanks for your call.
The mentorship of men. I'm in an environment where I've been dealing with men now for more than 40-something years, like yourself, in my career. But, Doc, we can see the decline in male teachers in our schools, etc. But this is my view, and I, looking at this from my way, the failure, poorly socialized our children, and especially our men, I really believe, in my view, this conspiracy of the promotion of the feminist movement, I believe this has a serious effect on marriage, family, and poorly socialized young men. I'm so convinced with this, why we have our boys. I have three grand boys, and thank God that my son-in-law and I are in their life. And you could see the starvation of some of their peers for the lack of a father not being in their life. But I hope someone, yourself and many others, will look at this promotion of the feminist movement who don't believe in family, marriage, etc. But boys are being structured in that environment. That is my view, and I believe that's have a serious impact on our young men. I'll hang up and listen to the response.
I'll let you respond, Dr. Fernando.
Wow, I don't know if I can launch a response to that. I know the last time we spoke, one of the things that I did say was that I thought that today we keep blaming fatherlessness as one of the key pillars of what's going wrong with our young men. And I introduce that I think that today it is really not fatherlessness so much, but motherlessness. And I don't mean that mothers don't exist. I mean that they're not being mothers. So any support I have for what the caller just mentioned comes from that ideology that I have. And it's that today's women have been cultured very differently to a place,
even you may call it necessarily so, where they are the center of the universe. What they want and what they need and what they have to do becomes pivotal and the thing that must be done. So if you call that the feminist movement, then maybe it is having an impact because it's distracting women from some of the things that they used to focus on in terms of my role is to make sure that everybody succeeds, as opposed to now my role is to make sure that I succeed.
Okay, this was a very fascinating hour. It's gone very quickly. Any closing remarks, Dr. Ian Fernando?
Well, I want to go back to probably where we started, discipline. Discipline could be punishment. Discipline could be being taught responsibility. And discipline can also be an understanding that you must abide by rules and regulations. I think all aspects of discipline has to be applied to our young men. But the least useful form of discipline is punishment, especially when that punishment is just to hurt. Punishment has to be wrapped in love. It has to be wrapped in an understanding of redemption and the process of moving towards being successful, or it's a waste of time.
Very well said, food for thought. Mr. Calvin Green, any closing remarks?
The only thing I would say is that I wish the best for our men in 2026, that we have more men who would step forward in my mind and be more mentors and to look out for the younger ones. When you drive every day, it pains me to see the amount of young men that are just walking our street aimlessly. They're tatted. The alcoholics. I just wish the best for our men in 2026.
My only few words would be that young men, boys, teenagers, no matter what age, believe in yourself. The sky is the limit. We have a beautiful country where you are not impeded by racism. Your religion is not going to impede your success. So please believe in yourself, and education is the key. With education, you can go anywhere. Have a good and safe week, Bahamas. This is Urologist Speaks.
But lead in your pencil make you feel like a champion.
Rise up again.
Let nothing keep you down.
Live your best.
Heavy urologist.
Urologist speak. Every urologist.